Morning, church. Man, it is good to be with you. Oh, no, I'm not preaching that this morning. I don't know. I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm just going to preach, and you guys try to find pictures to go along with it as we roll through. Oh, me. No, it's good to be with you. Happy Father's Day, dads. I'm glad to be counted among your number, and it is good to be together. As Joel mentioned earlier, we've got a lot of folks gone today. I know all our kids. This is kind of a little action area over here. We're missing a bunch of kids. We're missing this whole front row. I mean, Dave and Linda, they were late. You can lay down and take a nap during this. I mean, you guys got space for once without all those pesky. All the pesky Parkers in the way there, and so, but it is good to be for you all to be together. It's been despite the technical difficulties we experienced, a great time of worship. I really appreciated Ty's story and what a legacy your father left behind on this Father's Day. I was really touched that when you said you were somewhere that they didn't speak your language at all. I thought you'd told me you went to New York City, and I could understand. Can't understand where those people say, but that was pretty amazing. If you have missed what's been going on Wednesday nights, this last Wednesday night, we started the Journeys with Jesus, which is a kind of a summer-long VBS type setup on Wednesday nights where the kids are learning and singing together and then going for activities. It's really well done. Well, we're going to do something this Sunday morning to help you. How many of you went to Journeys with Jesus last Wednesday night, kids? Raise your hands. Raise your hands if you went to Journeys with Jesus. Okay. You know that, thanks a lot. You know that you have a memory verse for this Wednesday night. And it is in the bulletin, so we're going to practice it really quick. And this is the way it goes. This is how you're going to remember. It says, you know with all your heart and soul that, you know with all your heart and soul that not one of the good promises that the Lord your God gave you has failed. Right? Okay, let's try it. And everybody, you're going to learn this too. It's in your bulletin. It goes, you know with all your heart and soul that not one of the good promises the Lord your God gave you has failed. One more time. You know with all your heart and soul that not one of the good promises the Lord your God gave you has failed. Oh, very good. Now you guys got a jump start. And if you didn't come last Wednesday night, you're ready for this one. So it's a great program. I strongly encourage you. Bring friends, bring neighbor kids. It's a good time to do that. So William Penn, he was born October 14th in 1644. In case you're wondering, yes, William Penn is on the Quaker Oats box. Really is. But he was born October 14th, 1644, to this distinguished family in London, England. And at the age of 22, his father, who was an admiral in the Navy, in the British Navy, sent him to look after some family lands in Scotland. But while he was in Scotland, he was persuaded to join the Religious Society for Friends, a society that you and I and most of the world has come to call the Quakers. Well, when he returned to England, his family was Anglican, like everybody else in England, because it was illegal to be anything except Anglican in England. So he returned, and his newfound beliefs and teaching and writing shamed his family. and actually had him sent to jail on multiple occasions for his faith, for what he believed. It was heresy in there. Fortunately for William, after his father passed away, King Charles II owed his dad a big sum of money. Owed him a lot of money. There was a big loan. And so to pay off his father's loan, he decided to give young William Penn a large tract of land to the west and south of New Jersey. That land, young William Penn called Sylvania. And Sylvania just means woods. But officially, the king wanted to honor his father, so he named it Pennsylvania. And this new tract of land, which sounds a little bit of an understatement to us, Pennsylvania, tract of land, William Penn was in charge of it. So he implemented this government that had full freedom of religion, because he had not experienced that. They had fair trials. They had elected representatives of the people in power, and they had separation between church and state. He even gained a reputation for dealing fairly with the local Indians, and that was what they were called at that time, the local Native American population, the Indians. He chose to buy their land from them, even though he had the legal right and the military power to just take it. He was known to deal fairly and give even fair sums of money for the land he was taking from these native tribes. So, it was therefore no surprise to anyone when William Penn was planning and developing the chief city of Pennsylvania that he named it Philadelphia. Because Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love. Now, that's literally what the word means. Philadelphia is a compound Greek word taken from philos, meaning brother, and adelphos, meaning love. So literally, the name Philadelphia is brotherly love. Now, I don't think this is any vast overstatement. I don't like Philadelphia. I don't like the 76ers. I don't like the Flyers. I don't like the Phillies. And I sure don't like the Eagles. I've never been there. I have no desire to go there. To me, it is a city that I could forget and be perfectly good with. However, after doing a little bit of research this week, I got to tell you, Philadelphia has something that you and I ought to check up on. So as we are looking at taking the next step, at growing in our physical or our spiritual journey with God, the next step is Philadelphia. It is affection for your fellow human beings. So as we're striving to grow, as we're striving to continue to be transformed and to develop in spiritual growth, Peter urges us to consider brotherly love. So we're coming back to our passage that we're studying from the Christian Graces, 2 Peter chapter 1, beginning at verse 3, we read, "His divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness through our knowledge of Him who called us by His own glory and goodness. Through these He has given us His very great and precious promises, so that through them you may participate in the divine nature and escape the corruption of the world caused by evil desires. For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, to your goodness knowledge, and to knowledge self-control, and to self-control perseverance, and to perseverance godliness, and to godliness brotherly kindness or brotherly love. It depends on your translation. Brotherly love. How many of you grew up with brothers and sisters? Just raise your hand. For those of you who did not grow up with brothers and sisters, you may think brotherly love sounds like this wonderful, warm, sweet affection. For those of you who did grow up with brothers and sisters, you know that brotherly love sounds like an oxymoron, right? Those just two things don't go together. Brotherly love. I have one brother, and I can testify. I can tell you firsthand that our brotherly love sometimes manifested itself in raised voices, slammed doors, and a cacophony of bruises. I mean, that's just the way brotherly love worked itself out. So what does brotherly love even mean? Well, the word itself, it only appears about a half dozen times anywhere in Scripture. Of course, it only appears in the New Testament because nobody in the Old Testament spoke Greek. But anywhere in the New Testament, it only shows up twice. I would argue that the concept appears throughout Scripture, but the word itself only shows up twice. And in particular, shows up six times. But in particular, two of those passages, I think, shed some light on what the way the earliest Christians thought about Philadelphia, about brotherly love or brotherly affection. One of them comes from Romans chapter 12. Looking at verses 9 and 10, we read. Oh, there it goes. Sorry. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Now, my son loves this little function right here. The laser is the best part of this pointer, he's convinced. This word here, that's our word. That's Philadelphia. That's love. But we're going to kind of look back a little bit earlier to see what this is talking about. This love right here, the first love, that's the word agape, and we're probably familiar with that. It's that sort of all-powerful, all-consuming description for love. It's the kind of love that Christ has demonstrated for us, that God demonstrates towards mankind. It is self-sacrificing, self-giving. It is love to the nth degree, right? That's what that first sort of love is. It's used chiefly to describe the way God feels toward mankind. But it's this second word right here that's highlighted. That's the word devoted. And that's a similar word, and sometimes it's translated with a loving type, depends on your translation, but a loving type connotation. But really the word there, that sheds a little more light for us. It's the word philostorgos. Philos, philo, as in Philadelphia. It's the same root word, brother. And this familial affection. It is the word philostorgos, right here. That's the way parents and children feel about each other. That's the meaning of that word. Now, for all of you parents out there, or for those of you who have taken on the job of parenting regardless of the biology involved, you know the kind of affection, the kind of devotion that Paul is talking about here. You know that we don't love our kids because of what we can get out of them. You know we don't love them because they have similar interests to us, or because they're so perfect, or even because they're so lovable. We love our kids, and nothing can change that, but it's not because of anything they've done. In fact, there are no amount of mistakes or missteps, no degree of social or moral or ethical failure can ever make us love our children any less. We don't love them because of what they do. We love them because they are ours. We just choose to love them regardless. And Paul, the Apostle Paul here, is urging that sort of devoted love for one another. Choosing to love someone who's not your child with the same sort of devotion that you love your child. Children, it is choosing to love someone who is not your parent with the same sort of devotion that you have for your parent. So there's the first sort of insight into what Philadelphia means. One of the other passages I think that might be helpful comes from the book of Hebrews, chapter 13. We read in the Hebrew, what's really a sermon written down, but the writer there says, keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. And that's our word, Philadelphia, right there. That loving. Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. For by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. Continue to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison, and those who were mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. And it goes on, but we're going to stop right there for the sake of brevity. So the Hebrew writer, he urges these Christians, those Christians who are, by the way, going through a great deal of persecution, and he's saying, don't get caught up in yourselves. You're going through a hard time, I know. And the tendency when we go through a hard time is become very self-centered. He says, don't do that. I want you to still remember one another. And then he says, I want you to focus on your Philadelphia. And then he expounds to explain sort of what he means by that. He gives them some sort of practical ways of doing that. Looking after the strangers, showing them hospitality. Looking after those who are in prison, looking after those who have been mistreated. It is focusing on someone beside yourself. In other words, brotherly kindness, brotherly love is looking out into the world and opening your eyes to the world of others so that you can actually see what's going on in their lives and then do something about it. It is opening, seeing, and then doing. That's what brotherly love looks like in all practical terms. Now, one of the great theologians, I think, of our modern time, Richard Foster, sort of summed this idea up. He writes a lot about Christian living, about how to practically live out your faith. And this is what he said. He said, love is not communicated in the big event, but in the small acts of kindness. It is an everyday, I'm just looking after you sort of devotion. So this is not easy because it requires us to stop thinking about ourselves for a moment and start thinking about others. Now, this is, by the way, this is the disclaimer right here. This is the part of the sermon where I'm supposed to point out to you that you don't have to like them, you just have to love them. I mean, that's what I'm supposed to say at this point, and we can sort of console ourselves that we're doing our best to love a bad lot of people. And it would be so comforting, because we know how bad we are at it, it would be so comforting, except for the fact that it's not true. There is nowhere in Scripture that says, thou shalt love even if thou dost not like. Right? It's just not there. I mean, I've heard it in so many sermons, I was sure it was there. I looked up one side of the King James Version and down the other, and it wasn't there. So let's put it another way. You have heard it said that ye must love your brother even if thou dost not like him. But I say unto thee, that thou must both love and like thy brother. Philadelphia, brotherly love, in all practical terms, is liking someone. In fact, here's how I would describe it. It is choosing to like someone sacrificially, even though they don't deserve it. Maybe even choosing to like someone sacrificially because they don't deserve it. And you think, I can't do that. Well, just slow down here. What does liking look like? Well, when you like someone, you choose to spend time around them. When you like someone, you listen to what they have to say. When you like someone, you pay attention to them. You look after their needs. When you like someone, you choose to give yourself to them. That is not liking. That is Philadelphia. That is brotherly love. Looking to give yourself to someone without any expectation of a return. Now, no one has ever said that brotherly love was easy. In fact, I would argue that without God's merciful intervention, it is impossible. And it is difficult even with God's merciful intervention. But God has intervened, and he has promised to be at work in us, and we can be giving ourselves in brotherly love. We can be those people. It is not easy, but it can be done. So it was this attitude that shaped young William Penn as he founded this colony, this land of Pennsylvania, as he founded Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. And it was William Penn whom later said these words, "I expect to pass through life but once. If therefore there be any kindness I can show, or any good thing that I can do to any fellow being, let me do it now and not defer or neglect it, as I shall not pass this way again. If there's any good I can do for any fellow human being now, let me do it, because I may not come this way again." That is brotherly love. Choosing to do the good now that God has given us. And if you need prayers, if you need forgiveness, if you need strength, if you need encouragement, we want to give you that opportunity to be a part of a family, an active part of a family that's choosing to do the hard things, that's choosing to lay down our lives for one another and give ourselves in the cause of Christ devotion to one another. So if we can help you this morning, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?
Number 711.